Leave one of those open for airflow. Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you all for attending. We've got a quorum, so we're going to get, we've got a fairly lengthy agenda, so we're going to get started. For the record, my name's George Capatis, and I'm filling in today for the chairman of the State Workforce Innovation Board. Some quick notes as we begin the meeting. The meeting's being recorded. Before speaking, please state your name so the transcription service can accurately document today's meeting. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the board. It's open to the public. We'll be run in a manner compliant with RSA 91-A. Meeting materials for the board and the public can be found by visiting the Department of Business and Economic Affairs website. We've got a number of items to work through today. You'll find these items on the agenda with their enclosed supportive documents. The agenda and these documents have been provided to the board electronically. Printed copies are available today, and all materials were made available to the public via the VA website. Joe, would you like to begin the roll call for the meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Alberts.
Here.
Jim Alden.
Here.
Joseph Alexander. Stephanie Ashworth. Kevin Avard. Rick Bartle.
Here.
Alan, can you help me with your last name? Sorry.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just say Ballou.
Ballou. Alan Ballou.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alan. Christine Brennan. Anya Brzezinski. Paul Callahan, Kelly Clark, Kenneth Clinton,
here.
George Capatis,
present.
Mary Crowley, Tyler Eaton, Patrick Fall, James Jerry, Chase Hageman,
here.
Michael Kane, Shane Long,
here.
Donnelly Lozo,
here.
Lori Ann Lundgren, Larry Major,
here.
Ashok Patel, Tracy Pelton,
present.
Jim Prue.
Here.
Shannon Reed. Jay Rue. Richard Sala. Tim Sink.
Here.
Gary Thomas. Cullen Tiernan.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, with the roll call concluded, we have more than a quorum.
Super. Super. Okay. The meeting minutes for the March meeting are found in the packet. Any errors, corrections, omissions? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Again,
real fast. So the motion made by Jim Prue.
Yes.
And seconded by Donnelly Lozo.
DLL.
Thank you.
Again, welcome, everyone. We'd like to take a moment to see if anyone from the public would like to provide any public comment. If so, please state your name for the record prior to speaking. Give a moment, and if nothing, please provide to information items section 2.
You're good. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. So item 2A is something that we do every 2 years. We have a participant panel. So we just ask that if board members start thinking of some questions, this session is going to be led by both Lisa Gerard and Melissa Salmon, and I think we have some microphones for them as well. Do you mind taking it away, Melissa and Lisa?
So the participant panel is in front of you, and we're just going to go down the line. They could have a microphone, so hopefully you can be able to hear them. They're going to give you a little bit about who they are and how they came to be part of our Title I programs. And then Melissa and myself are going to ask the panel some questions. And then we'll turn it over to the board members to ask any additional questions. So Abo is going to take us over.
Hi, my name is Abo.
You got to go first, don't we?
Just about yourself.
I first heard about my term program when I was in serious trouble and facing charges in both New Hampshire and Massachusetts. Around that time, Allie, my term, was trying to reach out to me and my friends. Honestly, I thought she might have been in law enforcement or something. So I kept ducking her, but she didn't give up, evenly when I had to come to court in NH. Allie showed up with T and Jocelyn. That was the first time I actually saw someone in my corner. And that's how I got involved. She helped me. So I mean, advice. She got me into the young adult program. Before joining my turn, I didn't have a career for my future. I worked hard in warehouses, landscaping, just to make it ends meet. But I didn't really think I had a real career. With my turn, that I learned becoming an electrician, they guided me through the right path, showed me how I can move up, and now I'm finishing my second year in the apprenticeship. That support helped me see that I could build something for my future and show me I have a goal of my own, to own my own electricity company one day.
Discouraged any secondhand or secondary education. So I didn't really know how to apply to college or for scholarships. Or really where I wanted to start my career path in life. So that also, when I left that as well, left me with no family support. And then I found my turn, and they helped me choose a career path. They helped me figure out how to apply for assistance. They essentially helped me just figure out how to be an adult on my own. While I kind of like helped guide myself as well, they were a really strong guiding hand in that process of figuring out where I wanted to go with my life. And I don't really know necessarily where I'd be without Michelle and my turn. They gave me a lot of opportunities to get my foot in the door for a career path and to continue my education. And that was something that was very important to me because at the time I felt very lost and didn't know what I wanted to do. And Michelle helped me get my LNA license. She also helped me get through EMT school at New England Institute for EMS in Manchester. And just recently I also graduated from a phlebotomy course, which I passed as well. And she really helped me figure out that healthcare was something that's very important to me, and helping people who may not be able to assist themselves or may not have the means to do so is something that is very important to me, and I really appreciate them helping me figure that out.
Hi, I'm Mark Williams. I got laid off after about 20 years in a tech field, that was my second layoff in my career, and I think it hit me harder than the first, but it hit me pretty hard. So when I finally managed to get myself around to New Hampshire Employment Services and start getting involved there, Ann was such a great help then, but what we did was, you know, she looked at what do I want to do now, and I wanted to get into data analytics. I had tried to start getting into it before I was laid off, and so what happened was Ann got me into a couple of different courses. One of them was the WIOA, workforce, and I'm a techie, so this is kind of unusual for me to be talking to people. I've done before, but it's not usual. She got me into the dislocated worker program, And then she really wanted me to take the Workforce New Hampshire, Work Ready New Hampshire course, which helps doing kind of something like this, speaking to people, which I took, as well as she got into the Data Analytics Certified Professional Program with Visible Edge Institute, and that's the federal program. And that was awesome. And what happened was, when I went to interview, the second interview I had, they were really impressed by that, by all the certifications that I got. And I guess I did well, you know, Work Ready New Hampshire, speaking to them as well, because I wasn't aware there was going to be a panel there for an interview. So it was kind of like a little bit of interesting. And the other interesting fact is that it's an HES. I worked in Elmy over at 45 South Food Street. So, and Marlon got me into a real good place. I've never worked in the state before, and I've never worked in government before, and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm real happy to be here to tell you how good this was for me. Thank you.
I'm Kirsten Duff, and Ann Martin took care of me also. Did a great job. I was in the dislocated worker program also. So that I was a programmer before kids. About a few years back, my husband passed away, their dad, so everything kind of went south at that point. Lost a house, lost a lot of everything. So we struggled to get back on our feet. And I did pretty well for a while there, got back into programming, and then came the layoffs. I was in the first round of the layoffs, along with the Amazon news and so forth. but the whole department, all the work was moved to Germany, because I supposed to be Germany also. But I didn't want to go live there again. So, got me also into Visible Edge, and I did the Data Science and Machine Learning program there. And they hired me because I was speedy, and they thought I would do a good job teaching. So I assumed the Data Science and Machine Learning, the Data Analytics and Software Engineering and AI Technologies programs there, and I am happily taking care of more students like we were years back. I think that's it for me.
Hi everyone, my name is Yulia. I'm 20 years old. I live in Nashua, New Hampshire. I've always lived in New Hampshire, but I recently moved back from Southern Florida about 2 years ago with my four-year-old daughter. After moving back, I knew that I wanted to start some sort of career, something that would be flexible for me and my daughter, and that I would be able to turn into a business of my own one day. Massage therapy was always something that I thought of, but I wasn't exactly sure how to get into it or where to start. After doing some research and finding some schools, I was then faced with the challenge of how was I going to pay for this, as well as be a mom, and doing classes and providing for her. My mom was actually the one who referred me to the WIOA program. I was able to apply and do the whole onboarding process remotely. It took about a month or so to do the paperwork and do all the requirements, finding a school that would fit my needs. I toured two of the schools in Manchester and ended up at Northeastern Institute of Whole Health. And after a very long year, I am now a full-time licensed massage therapist in Maine as well as New Hampshire, and I hope to own my own business one day.
Hi, my name is Jasmine. I'm 17 years old. I was born and raised in Manchester, New Hampshire. I'm a senior at Memorial High School. I'm a member of JAG at Memorial, and I'm enlisted in the Army National Guard, and will be shipping out this year, June 30th, to Fort Jackson, South Carolina. I've recently received a promotion, and I'm now private second class. And I joined JAG because my friend Isabel referred me I've been a part of the program for 2 years, and she recommended it to me. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Isabel, and I'm a senior at Memorial High School, and I'm a member of JAG at Memorial. JAG has helped me in so many ways. I've always wanted to do acting, but I never really thought it was capable. I didn't think I was capable enough. But with JAG, I have realized that I am capable of it, and no matter what, I can put my mind to anything. And they have helped me to come out of my shell and practice public speaking by attending classes at the Palace Theater. I needed help with my academics. I was in danger of flunking out, and Miss Gates has helped me with my classes and stay on top of all my work. Our field trips have helped me learn more about our community and jobs available in our area. And I just want to say, JAG is amazing, and I'm thankful that I have met her and the program. So thank you, guys. She referred me to JAG and thought maybe it would help me come out of my shell, you know, get more opportunities in life with my career that I wanted to do. And I didn't really have anything else other than acting because that's what I wanted to do. And Miss Gates has helped me a lot. And my grant sponsor decided to recommend it to me because it would help my needs and help me with my career that I wanted to do. And she introduced me to Miss Gates, who agreed I would be a good fit and helped me fill out all the paperwork to join.
Kirsten, I'm going to ask you the same question. Can you tell the board a little bit more about how you became involved with the Dislocated Worker Program? I think you kind of explained it, but how did you first hear about the program?
I was starting and stopping different programs because I tend to be interested in a lot of different things, but it's not helpful if you start and stop. So I got into all kinds of other things, like legal. None of it went anywhere, so I needed some guidance. So and provided that and got me pointed into a direction that updates my skills from where I was, being a programmer in a language that was becoming not used very much. And that was part of the problem. I was not finding another position like the one before. So I pointed me in the direction of data science and artificial intelligence and so forth. And that worked out for me.
Thank you very much.
If you could tell us a little bit more about what types of services you receive. You talked a little bit about the training, but if you could talk about who did the training for you, what kind of services you received, and if there were any supportive services involved.
So Nicole was my career navigator. She was really nice. She always reached out to me, made sure I was on track with schooling. They were able to pay for most of the tuition, and then NIH Work now was paid for the other half. They reimbursed me for mileage, so to and from school weekly. I was able to get a check every week to put in my gas tank, which also helped out a lot. They paid for my cell phone bill at times. If I wanted to send that in, they were able to help pay for that, which also helped. So I had more money to do other things or to pay daycare. A huge thing was that I couldn't find a good fit for my daughter for a daycare, and they were able to connect me with a place that helped me get her into a really good school that she is still now in. She loves it, so that was a really big help. And I believe that's it.
That's great. Thank you so much. And I kind of have the same question for you. What kind of services did you receive? Did you attend the training? I know you're still in training. Can you tell us a little bit about that, how that's going, and if you received any supportive services?
I go to the Manchester, called the mechanic school, trades school, and they helped me get in there. They paid for my tools, got me rides there if I had to, if I needed. They support me, and they really just believed in me and said that I could do this, and I got a bright future. I just gotta keep going.
How long do you have left?
I got about 2 more years, a year and a half. Awesome. Then I'll get my master's.
This one has been you. Did you know what career you wanted to pursue? You came in at the dislocated worker program, so you were probably trying to upskill some of your certifications. But how did your counselor help you through this process?
Yeah, thanks. It was one of those things where I knew I wanted to get into data analytics. And it was interesting because I couldn't find that specific job, description in the system. So we had to kind of figure it out, and it was good. Martin was the one that kind of directed everything that way. She got me the program for Visible Edge Institute. Got me into that, and that was the analytics program. And I didn't say it when I was explaining, but I ended up in the Economic and the Labor Market Information Bureau, ELMI, as a labor market analyst too. So it was a great course because, I think I said that they looked at it in the interview. They looked at the listing of all the courses and the certifications that I got, and they were real impressed. And that was all Ann directing and saying, you've got to do this, and she really wanted me in, the work ready in New Hampshire and all that. So it was, everything was really good. So,
Sid, I'm going to you next with the same question. So you kind of had an idea of you wanted to get into healthcare, but you also were doing LNA, you did some phlebotomy now, and you did EMT, which is kind of a great bundle to have. So how did that kind of come about?
So when I first went to Michelle at my turn, like you said, I had kind of an idea. I was at the time working for an in-home healthcare company, so I traveled and take care of older residents in their own homes, and I enjoyed it very much, but I wanted more from that. And so Michelle kind of helped me narrow things down, and at the time, one of my biggest issues was I was living out of my car. So we actually found a dementia care facility in Durham, New Hampshire, and the owner had also built a bunch of tiny homes for affordable housing, and the employees got a discounted rate on the rent as well. So I had gotten in at the dementia care facility, and which also gave me housing. And from there, I went and got my LNA to further my career at the dementia care facility. And later on, decided I still wanted to go further because I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I enjoyed learning more. Whether or not it was going to be something that I wanted to make my career or not, I just enjoyed learning. And Michelle really kind of helped me wade through those waters to figure out what exactly I did want to do and make it a bit easier to make those choices.
Thank you. I'm going to turn it over to Jazzy. Yes. So I know that you're a senior.
Yes.
All right. So what was the biggest benefit that the program offered you, and how did it help you to achieve your goals?
So Drive helped me a lot with keeping track of my schoolwork. I'm always the type to, I stay on track, but sometimes I can get off. Like, there's sometimes these periods that I don't stay on track. So Drive definitely helped me stay on top of my schoolwork and also graduate on time. And Ms. Gates actually helped me a lot with doing my ASVAB, practicing my ASVAB, because it was very different. There's a lot of different topics that I did not know anything about. So she allowed me to study, and she's always helped me. She's always made sure that I was on track with studying, because she knows like the time that I would go in to go for testing. And she helped me get accepted into the Army National Guard. So it benefited me a lot, definitely. And she also helped me understand the cost of living and how to be an adult. And prepared me for life after college. So, yeah.
So now we'd like to open it up to the board to ask some questions that might not have been answered. So please go ahead and raise your hands, and we'll get your microphone when you need it.
Chase Hagman. Lisa, I don't know how I feel about you singling me out just then.
You were going to raise
your hand. Your stories are all incredible. Like, I'm just sort of sitting back here in awe, and great questions were asked. I'm actually having a hard time finding a good question, but we've talked a lot about, you know, the successes and the benefits, the programs and organizations you've been involved with. I guess from like a board perspective, it would also be helpful to know if there are things that we can help improve upon, you know, to make the experience better, connect you with an additional resource, you know, things you noticed along the way that were great, but, you know, so are there any examples of that? And the answer can be no. Just curious if there's ways that we can help improve the program.
Does any of the panel want to try to answer that question?
I feel like JAG, as of right now, is a good, great program. I don't really think there's anything that there should be changes to it, just because it does so much for all the students or just anybody that is in the program. I think it's perfect.
Well,
a lot of times my case manager Michelle and I will joke that I'm kind of her guinea pig lab rat with a lot of stuff. So we've definitely worked together a lot on figuring out how the best route and best path to get me to where I need to be. And sometimes that could be a little frustrating for both of us, but I think my turn did a really good job of working with the participants, and even when things didn't necessarily go as planned, it was still they still did their very best and absolute hardest to make sure that I got to where I needed to be.
I think that the follow-up is incredible. I might not act it, but I am a little long in the tooth. And when my second interview came through with a job, you know, it's testament to the system, you know, that you have and the program. Because the first time I got laid off, it was not a good experience. But this was an awesome experience, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Hi, Tracy Felton. Thank you for all your stories. Those were amazing. My question to all of you is, how could we have connected you sooner with the programs that we offer? And how did you find the programs? Like, And would you wish you had found it sooner in life?
I definitely wish I had found it sooner in life. I think I started with my turn when I was 19, almost 20, maybe. And I didn't even know that programs like this existed at all, not just for younger adults, but also for adults as well. I wish I had definitely found it sooner. It seems like it was almost very hard to hear about it unless you knew somebody in the program. I feel like it should, I think it should be broadcasted a little bit louder that, because there's so many kids and young adults out there that are struggling so hard right now. A lot of my friends are, and most of them don't even know that programs like this exist. So I definitely think it needs to be maybe a little more publicized or broadcasted a bit more.
I had been in the JAG program for like a few years now, so I have been in there since I was like maybe late sophomore. I really do wish that I had had JAG before, because it would have helped me through high school, through the whole thing. And I wish JAG was more announced. I wish more people knew about it, because like she said too, I didn't even know about JAG until my guidance counselor told me. And now that I know about it, I tell everybody about it. I've told her about it because it's such a good program, and I wish more people got the chance that I got with JAG. So.
Donnelly Lozo, I just, first of all, thank you for sharing your story. It's not easy, and you're all lined up for us all to look at you. You did a great job sharing your stories. And Tracy's question is a very important question, because sometimes no matter how much you advertise, it might not be in the right place for the people that need it the most. So word of mouth is always the best. But I want to ask a question about what's next, in the sense of, so throughout all of your experiences, you've talked about the folks that supported you and helped you find your path. Do you feel like you learned enough through that experience that as you move forward in your respective careers, that you feel like when you hit those bumps in the road or that barrier, that you feel like you have the skills to overcome them? I think that that's an important kind of next part of your world.
I would definitely agree that I don't think I would have any of the knowledge that I have now if I didn't find my turn. There were times that there were things that my turn couldn't help me with, but my case manager still went with me to the dealership to go finance my car because she wanted to make sure I didn't get ripped off or whatever. But in that process, she never just took over the situation and did everything for me. She walked me through everything, every step that I needed to do, every possible outcome that could occur. I feel like I have been very well prepared for an adult life on my own. And there's been situations very recently that, looking back, I went, wow, I don't think I would have been able to handle this like I did maybe 2 years ago if I hadn't been with my turn.
I definitely overcome a lot. 2 years ago, I probably would have never sat here and talked to you guys. I would have been shy, scared, something. And Allie and them helped me out a lot. All right? I just had to say that, because 2 years ago, I would have not walked in here.
So, as I said before, I've always wanted to do acting, but I was so shy. I wouldn't be able to be sitting here talking to anybody right now either. But JAG has helped me with that, and JAG has helped me with my future. I always got told that like acting wouldn't be as successful as illustrators is when you see in movies or anything like that. But JAG has helped me push myself to my limit and to know that I can do acting, and that is my future, and that's what I want.
When I first started the WIOA program and first started school, I was living with my mom and my daughter and my little brother in a very small apartment. department. After now, since completing school and completing the program and everything, I'm a full-time therapist and I'm able to afford all my bills by myself, as well as rent, as well as my car, you know, how expensive everything is right now. So I think they really set me up for a good future for me and my daughter, and I'm very excited to see what else will come.
The main thing is that if something like this happens again, for me, I will know what to do right away. And I appreciate all the help that I got. And I know how to use it. And it's been right on target to help me weather anything that comes along.
Jim Prue. Great program presentation, outstanding work, everybody. My question is, if you find yourself someday underemployed, which of all those wonderful programs would be the one that would support you if you find yourself underemployed? And that would also include maybe the people that we know that might be underemployed. What would the best resource for somebody like that be?
And then you get the rest of these items.
Any other questions? Anybody? I'm sorry.
Can you elaborate just on what you mean by underemployed, Chris? Say you found you want to become an RN. You want to do those other things that you hadn't done yet, and you were maybe working professionally as an LN, and you want to get to that next level. That would be a situation where you feel like maybe you're underemployed. So what would the resource be?
No, I'm sure there's other programs out there. My term, I do believe, is 18 to 24, so I'm kind of aged out of that at this point. I do feel like they have, you know, provided me with like a good knowledge basis for if I were to find myself in that situation. I feel like I would know the next steps to take as to maybe I could speak to my employer, see if they would maybe pay for those classes, if they would, want to help me progress and further my career to be employed by them. If not, I do know that there are other adult programs.
Real?
Yeah, I've heard good things about that.
That's good.
And there's your commercial.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, Jim.
Hi, Jim Alden. I heard about JAG and my turn several times how fortunate you were to find it. Could you expand a little bit on how you found it? I know word of mouth, but by whom was it referred? Things like that.
So my guidance counselor at my high school, she referred me to JAG because I was just at that place at the time, and she figured JAG would help me with my life and how I could manage to what I want to do with my life, with my job, my career. And I guess with me being in the program for a few years, I've experienced like a lot of stuff with the program. We went on field trips to like colleges and stuff, and it's helped a lot. It's opened my eyes with everything. I've even went on field trips that didn't really have to correlate with my job, but I still wanted to, you know, explore everything because JAG had all those opportunities, so I wanted to take the opportunities to do so.
Colin Tiernan, so my first time here, so new just like you guys, and I thought you did a great job, so kudos. I'm also a Marine, so I'd love to thank you guys for your service preemptively. That's going to be a great experience for you. What I was kind of curious about, maybe I missed this a little bit, but is there any attraction from any of you all, or are you guys interested in state service after this, the state of New Hampshire? Is this something that's inspired you to get more involved, or do you have jobs lined up with the state of New Hampshire?
Mark does. That's all set.
I'm Mark. I'm employed by NHES, and I had never been employed by a government before, and I'm really enjoying being employed by the state. There's a lot of perks. There's a lot of things that I had not seen from the private sector, I really do enjoy it. So if you can, there's always that. But yeah, I really do. I'm
open to it.
Okay, one more, and then we're going to move on.
Larry Major. This one's for Abo. I'm glad 2 years has passed so you can be here to talk to us. But my question is, did you know that you wanted to get into electrical, or could it have been welding or HVAC, or did you have to kind of experiment? I didn't really even actually know what I wanted to do at first. We tried a couple of things. I tried to get a CDL license. I was like, maybe not. And then she told me to try electrician. I didn't want to do it at first. And she was like, give it a shot. I was like, no, I don't even know nothing about tools at first. And then I gave it a shot, went to class, and then she got me a job with somebody she knows. And then I just started liking it. I really enjoyed it, and I like it. Well, welcome to the trades. Thank you.
Great. Again, George Capatis, and I just want to extend my thanks to all of you as well. It's great when Mark gave his little spiel there about employment. I was like, phew, it was a good one. It wasn't bad. But, I mean, what could be better? We're facing you, and your counselors and all are behind you, facing you from the back, so everything's covered. But I want to thank you all for sharing your success stories, and, we wish you all the best, and we hope you just build upon the successes you've experienced to date, and best wishes to each and every one of you in the future. But on our end, from a board, I mean, this is what it's all about, being able to listen to these success stories, because that's why we're all here, is to make a better world for everybody. So, again, I want to just thank you for sharing. You did a great job. You spoke well. Everybody's happy. So thanks again, and we'll just move on with the informational items now.
Absolutely, and thank you all. I mean, you're...
I just want to say, did you see that we're behind the panel? If you all could stand, these are all either career navigators or program managers from the Title I programs. These are the people that make it happen. So we just want to recognize you all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're going to page 38 in the packet in front of you. Item 2B is a rapid response update from Nick Massey. I don't know how Nick's going to follow that up, but good luck, Nick.
I'll give him my best shot. thank you. Nick Massey, current program year 24, reporting period of July 1st, 2024 to today. Rapid response has documented 29 rapid response events across New Hampshire. These events include 14 rapid response presentations, visits to individual locations, and distribution of pertinent material, and on-site discussions with company management to discuss advantages of rapid response programs and what we can provide. The number of rapid responses for the program year are 36% less than program year 23. So we've done 29 this year versus 45 in program 23. Rapid response activities covered or impacted 704 employees in the fields of distribution, hospitality, logistics, manufacturing, and retail. Of the 29 rapid response events, 18 of these were in person, where we went out and spoke with the employees at the facility individually, and had 10 being full team presentations between all the rapid response teams, health and human services, adult education, vocational rehab, employment security. Seasonally adjusted estimates for April 2025, the latest figures we have, that place the number of employed residents in 752,990, a small decrease of 690 from the previous month, and an increase of 2,770 from April of 2024. The number of unemployed residents increased by 380 in the month to 24,170. This is an increase of 5,400 more unemployed than in April 2024. There's also a decrease in the total labor force between March 2025 and April 2025 of approximately 310 people. Nationally, the seasonally adjusted unemployment rate for April 2025 was 4.2%, unchanged from the March rate, an increase of 0.3 percentage points from the April 2024 rate. Since taking over the Rapid Response Program in January of 25, we've worked to build a cohesive team between the New Hampshire Works partners to have consistency in our presentation, provide rapid response services in an understandable, useful, and professional manner. We've been building adaptability into the current system to manage all situations that may be encountered with a consistent outcome. And one of the things I wanted to bring up was recently, as of Friday, we were notified of Job Corps programs being paused, as they said, and it impacted 250 students and 125 staff members in the Manchester facility. So between Friday morning and Monday at 1 p.m., we were able to gather all of our team and go in and present resources that were affected students. Many of them live on campus and had no housing to go to. They were supposed to be out by this coming Friday. I believe that's been extended for an additional week. So we were able to bring in people to help them talk about what's available for housing, what's available for healthcare, what's available for continuing their education, different programs. The military was there also, talked about the options there. We're going back on, actually tomorrow, we'll have two rapid responses for the staff. There's 125 staff members that will be out of the job. Possibly this Friday, or they will be paused at this Friday. So, thank you. That's the update on the rapid response program. Any questions? Sure.
Chase Hickman. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate the update. I guess a question I have for you and Joe or whoever wants to answer. There were roughly 40 students that were going to be potentially homeless. And I guess the question I have is, what are we actually able to present in terms of options for housing for them on such short notice?
Well, we had the City of Manchester and Waypoint coming in, and Waypoint was taking all their documents, all the information they could to see where they could place them. Waypoint specializes in helping homeless teens or children, youth up to zero, I think, age 24. So they were the kind of focus on that.
So for the record, Joe Dorian, sorry, I stepped out to take a call exactly about that. So the process is ongoing. So I'm sure Nick covered, you know, there's about approximately 250 students who will be impacted by this, 40 of which are have been shared with us, are currently homeless and are facing. So there's these conversations that we can't share publicly. There's some stuff happening behind the scenes. Some positive momentum has been the original closure for those students was supposed to be this Friday. We've got an extension to the 13th, which is great, you know, and then USDOL has is potentially looking at extending that even further for the individuals who are homeless until maybe the 30th when the operations have to fully cease. But there are some background conversations going on of how to serve those folks. But I'm sorry if I'm repeating something, but at the student resource fair we had yesterday, we had a really good showing and some real positive. We were talking to the students before, during, and after. So we are connecting them to the resources. But it'll be, and we'll be on site tomorrow for the rapid response. And we plan on pulling Center Director Stephanie Ashworth aside, who couldn't be here today. She's a member of the board for obvious reasons. So ongoing. Sorry if I repeated myself too.
Yeah, George Capatis for the record. I just want to extend my thanks to BEA and all the partner agencies to have that short a time span and to put an event like that together and to have as, you know, just about basically all the students there, plus all the resources. I mean, you're talking Friday, and then it's the weekend, and then Monday you're all there. I mean, you did an outstanding job, and I can't thank you enough on behalf of all the partner agencies as well. Okay.
Item 2C, we'll kick it over to Melissa Carter. Fiscal update.
Rick Bartle for the record. I'm just trying to make sense of the math. So for 24, 1.955, it's indicated here that's 33% expended with a remaining of 494. That doesn't calculate the 33%? Am I misunderstanding what I'm reading here?
I don't have my computer open. It's all a formula-based spreadsheet.
Okay.
From the different grants. So I would have to.
Okay, it could just be a typo. Maybe it was 88% or something like that. I just wanted to make sure I was. But 1.955 of the fiscal year 24 has been expended.
I think it might be the way the sentence. Sorry, Chase Hagman for the record.
Yep.
It says that the grant had 1.9 expended, which is 30. Oh, you're right. No, never mind.
That's not 33%. Yeah. it doesn't matter. I just wanted to make sure that either. If there was a language issue or if there was a number issue. But it looks like that is, if that is the actual expenditure at this point, it's on track for that first year.
Mr. Gerard, for the record, I'll jump in. It's not only what has been expended, but obligated. So if you have an obligation, that is added into it as well. So right now, we're about 92% obligated and expended. So it's both of those categories combined. So we
had
an obligation
to
add in as well.
Okay.
Item
2D is a performance update. Lisa Gerard.
Questions? We'll move on.
Great. Item 2E, every board packet, we always put in success stories. So some other folks that you can read about in our different programs. Happy to entertain any questions that you may have on any of the program success stories.
Any questions, anybody?
This is Lisa Gerard for the record. I don't have a question, but I missed my opportunity to
about about a month or so. She's going to help us with some data, different kinds of things that can help Melissa and myself take some of those things off our plates and give us more time to do other things that are under our job descriptions as well. So we're very thankful and happy to have Melody here. She came from DHHS. I worked with her for many years in child support, so we're very happy to have her on our team.
I worked for DHHS for 33 years, 32 of which was with child support. I retired in 2018, moved to Colorado to be with my kids and grandchild, and although I love them very much, my hands are home. So anyways, and one moved to Florida and one came back. So I did a short stint with Department of Safety before I came to OWA. And I'm happy to be back. I always enjoyed working for the state. And like I said, I did work with Lisa for a while with a great team. So it made it a little bit more comfortable coming into this position, knowing somebody. And it's a great group. I love them all already. They're just wonderful to work with. So I'm happy to be here.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Awesome.
Yeah, they paid me. Yes.
Okay. Item 2F, for some new, we have some new board members here today. Last year was the first year we did the New Hampshire Works Conference since 2018. So it is now becoming an annual event because we're going 2 years in a row. So still don't have our triple crown yet, but that'll be next year after we get it done. So we want to make sure that the board knows about it. Mark it in your calendars if you'd like to attend. More information coming your way, but it's happening. We're very excited. Friday, October 17th, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. with an agenda and all that. We're actually way ahead of the game in terms of planning. We're going to be doing a call for presenters very soon. So if you'd like to present, Kelly Clark last year, who's a board member, actually presented, which was great. Chase Hageman was on a panel for us. So at some point, this is an invitation. If you're interested, we'll do a call for presenters, but some of you will probably be voluntold. So look out for an email from us on that. But please mark that in your calendar. We are requesting some volunteers, including the award selection committee. So one thing that the feds mentioned years ago was the lack of training that we were doing. And we agree. I mean, COVID happened, and we couldn't really do a whole lot of training because everything was upside down. So as soon as it kind of calmed down, we put everything together in terms of training throughout the year. But we really wanted to get the conference back. So here it is. But another aspect that we really wanted to focus on was better acknowledging service. We have a lot of really exemplary employees throughout the whole New Hampshire Works network. So it's not only BEA, NHES, it's Department of Ed, it's DHHS, it's the community college system, it's CAPHR, it's a whole bunch of other folks, My Turn JAG, everybody that really kind of pulled together to get the work done. So we are looking for three members to join an award selection committee. So we actually, Sarah Wheeler, who's here, put together a great, our partner from Department of Education, put together a great rubric. So we're ready to go. We just need volunteers. So if you're interested in serving on an award selection committee, we will be meeting on October 6th. So if you're free on October 6th, we'll work the time out, that sort of thing. But we want to have we're working backwards from the deadlines of selection. So we have enough time to print the awards, invite the attendees, to make sure that they're actually going to be at the conference for the 17th. So we need three people. So if you're interested in joining that or being a presenter at the conference, you can speak to me or Jess at the end of the meeting, or you can volunteer yourself now. But no pressure. We're here for a little while longer. So.
Am I going to fall in the voluntold category?
Chase, I looked at, you know, it's and actually, I forgot to mention Commissioner Capatas helped with the award ceremony last year, which is great. Donnelly Lozo was a presenter talking about all things community action. So it really is a it's an all-volunteer effort, and it's it was great. So, any questions?
Great. Any questions, anybody? They all did a great job last year, and we'll see if they're up to par this year or not. Pressure's on, buddy.
I know. 2 years in a row. 2G state plan session. So we're going to talk a little bit more about how we've been moving along since we met in March. We've had a lot of audits and whatnot. So this is kind of explaining why we're hoping to do some of these board involvement sessions ahead of this meeting, but that, frankly, between contracts, audits, and everything else in between, didn't get there. So we will be sending out to the board on June 17th at 4 o'clock p.m. and June 24th at 4 o'clock p.m. invitations to have some conversations about the state plan planning process as was identified in the last board meeting. So that will be the kickoff. So you will, as board members, be getting an email about that in the next day or two, inviting you to that. So if you can't make one of those sessions, we can always do stuff offline and whatnot, but we want to be responsive to the board. So another save the date, if you will, for June 17th and June 24th, and we can send out more information too in the next day or so.
Okay.
And that's a direct result of the conversations at the last board meeting.
Sounds good.
Okay. Also, too, you'll see we're on the road. We saw Jim wrapping up in Littleton the other day. Whatever you were eating looked great. We almost invited ourselves. Was that?
We were eating?
Yeah, yes. but we're working our way through our public comment sessions. You'll see we're very lucky to find all free locations, including at NHES quite a bit. Thank you, Commissioner Donnelly, for and CAP HR. We have a few more to go, with tomorrow being up in Laconia, but we're trying to complete our public comment sessions. Our written comment period is through the month of July. So we have historically not received much, and so yeah, that's any question about that before.
Rick Bartle, for the record, how well attended are these?
Not, they have historically been not well attended at all. We put it on our website, NHES. We put an ad in the Union Leader. Frankly, we get the written comment. That's what we get from the public comment. Is a requirement on the state and federal side that we just we provide people the opportunity, and the stuff that we work with isn't controversial. It doesn't bring in special interests. It's not like you're building a highway and there's environmental concerns or whatnot.
Right.
There's, you know, and Donnelly and Commissioner, you've been doing this for longer than I have. So,
it's typical. No.
Yeah.
And Donnelly Logan, I guess I would just add that I think it's important to have the opportunity for public comment, but people that aren't in the weeds in this work,
right?
They, you know, like Joe said, people are just happy that we have a work plan and that we're caring about this issue, and I think we get more feedback from the businesses we work with outside of these times. So, I mean, I think I attended the last state planning. I think I went to 3 public sessions, and if there was more than a handful,
I'd shock. Okay. And we're going to be doing focus groups with actual frontline staff. So that is separate from the public comment session. So we invite frontline staff, the folks that you saw here sitting behind, practitioners, to talk about what we can do better, what's the plan. So it's all little parts of the larger outreach, so to speak.
Mosaic, yep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Item 2H is an audit update. We have had a fun year of audits. Again, for the record, Joe Dorian. We have 3. So I don't want to read everything in here. We went through the single state audit. That was supposed to be a 2-week process. It became a 2-month process, kind of like Gilligan's Island, a 3-hour tour turned into how many seasons on television. So we only had 1 finding. And it was just an issue on reporting, which was quickly rectified. We actually took a training on it and got everything. So we finish that. That's the FFATA, which stands for the Federal Funding Accountability and Transparency Act. We had new staff transition. It just fell off the work plan. We got back on, and so that was that. And then we had the Senior Community Service Employment Program, or CSEP. It's a program that falls under board purview, and they were with us for a whole week. And despite their best efforts, they found nothing. So we were very happy to wish them well on the way out. And then last but not least, we had the Consolidated Compliance Review, or CCR. They say it's not an audit, but my friends, it's an audit. It's like, you know, so that is what it is.
You're being recorded.
I know. And the feds do listen and read our stuff too. So they're great.
For the record, that was George Capatis.
So for the board, new board members, and just a reminder, we go through this every 3 years. So I should back up to the single state audit. I think they're going to do again next year. I think we lost the coin toss. So we're going to see them again. And I think CSEP as well is coming back next year because they want to. Great. And so the Consolidated Compliance Review is different. It's once every 3 years because we're considered low risk. We're a low risk. Other states see the U.S. Department of Labor yearly. You know, if they're high risk or 2 years, we are on the as little of a review as possible. That's the best you can get. It's 3 years, kind of the gold standard, if you will. So that triennial occurrence will happen again in 2028. Very much looking forward to that. At the time of writing the report, we didn't have the findings. We met with them on Friday morning. And I shouldn't say this, but we try to have a little fun here. We did kind of take a little bit of a office guess, if you will, of how many we would get. And I want to say that I was victorious. We had three. We had only had three, down from seven previously. And in comparison to other states and territories like Puerto Rico, that gets 34. So I just want to show kind of how the spectrum, if you will. So we only had three findings, one of them that we have already addressed, and two that we think are silly, but we will work through them because we're always willing to focus on continuous improvement. So we only had three findings this year, over 850 documents, 2 weeks of meetings. We got through it. So thank you to our partners, too, at Employment Security. You were also part of that. I know Sarah and I, we were spending a lot of time together. But happy to answer any questions. Sorry, that was a long kind of update. But that's been our life the past few months.
Since January.
And that's, of course, this is Melissa Carter's first time going through, so she hasn't quit yet. So that's a good sign.
Good thing.
Happy to entertain any questions. Forgive me for being a little punchy.
Questions? Anybody? No?
Okay. And we'll update the board, too, on what those three findings are for transparency. It'll be an informational item in October and what we're doing to address those other two. Once it's actually going to be grants management, that we're actually really excited. It's a new grants management software, so it's going to help. Item 2I is per the requirements of the board funds that we have. These are non-state, non-federal funds in a dedicated fund. So whenever we access those, the process is to provide a memorandum to the chair for approval, or I'm sorry, for consideration. And if that individual approves, then so you'll see it was for some staff training. And so that is item 2I. Are there any questions on that?
Seeing none. Again, for the record, this is George Capatis. Can we move on to the board motions and discussions?
Yep. Mr. Chairman, if we could, maybe we'll come back to 3A if we could and go to 3C.
Sure.
If that's okay.
Change the order of business. Yep. Anybody have an issue with that?
No.
Go ahead.
Just because I know I think a few folks, I think one had to leave, but so I want to try to get through anything that we may have to. So we try the best, so we're working with the New Hampshire Audubon, so the folks here, for the next year of meetings. So We wanted to run these dates by folks. If we're unable to secure those dates, we're going to try to move it the week prior or before, that sort of thing, on that Tuesday. But we wanted to get a board approval on these dates for the next calendar year here at New Hampshire Audubon. It's part of our annual selection of the meeting dates for the next year. And we'll send out, once we lock down the contract, the firm dates and the location.
Everybody okay with that?
Do I have to make a motion? Make a motion to accept the draft motion?
Second.
Second the proposed dates.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Jim with the motion.
Jim approved.
And second with Mike Albert.
Yeah. You're going back to the regular one.
Sorry. 3D is a little bit of a typo, sorry. So fast fingers there. It's actually not the dislocated worker contract. It's the adult contract. So periodically we have to procure the different programs that we have. So the WIOA adult program, currently administered by CAPHR, Community Action Program of Hillsborough and Rockingham Counties. The adult program went out to bid. We formed a review committee. I was hoping to get Shane before he left and Kelly Clark, who's not here today, to talk about that, but he had to leave, unfortunately. So we did have two submitted proposals, one from the Community Action Program of Hillsborough and Rockingham County that once scored. The scoring committee was myself, Kelly Clark, and Shane Long. Scored an average of 94.68. Another provider, Unique System Skills LLC, submitted a proposal, and it received an average score of 55.68. We have an item going before the Governor and Executive Council tomorrow for a four-year contract with the Community Action Partnership of Hillsborough and Rockingham Counties, and we are looking for a draft motion to approve the recommendations of the review committee, which selected CAPHR.
So moved.
Okay. Second. Any discussion? If not, hear a motion. Moved and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Note that I abstain from
one abstention.
Thank you.
And was it Tracy with the second? Thank you. I'm sorry. And we're looking, and we'll brief the board. It's going to the Executive Council tomorrow, so we're fingers crossed that everything works out just fine. Item 3E is the, and that was for a four-year contract too. I think I mentioned four-year contract. So 3E is the New Hampshire Works Conference. So last year, we didn't know how much it was going to cost because we had not done it in years. We operated on a very efficient budget. The biggest cost, or really the only cost we have other than like some folders and pens and some minor printing, is food. We do provide breakfast and lunch. It's kind of a sad box lunch. People hated the box lunch, but it's
a real pitch.
So please come and be sad with the sandbox lunch. Coffee is great there, though. We had 180 attendees. We have identified a source for the food, but we want a backup plan if in case that funding source is not available, because we will not be meeting as a board until a few weeks prior to the New Hampshire Works Conference. So we're asking for approval of up to $5,000. I believe last time we had board approval up to 12. We came nowhere near that. I think we got to like $3,800 with between food printing and folders. We are very cheap. We had folders left over from last year. And actually I'm looking at a few of the people that were collecting the folders. We're actually just ripping off the sticker and just putting on new. So we're very frugal, very frugal. So we're asking for the board for $5,000 to execute the New Hampshire Works Conference. And I don't want to, does that person that is providing the food want to mention or?
Oh, I'm happy to.
Okay.
Don Lee also. So one of the opportunities that we have as partners is our community services block grant funding, which they like us to use to leverage other dollars. And so we have offered to use those dollars to cover the food at the conference for good
nice.
Use of those funds. However, the CSBG was zeroed out in the current budget that has been presented to Congress, which is why it's good to have a backup plan. We're relatively hopeful that Congress will fund the community services block grant again based on support that we have seen across both sides of the aisle. So, but just in case, belt and suspenders, not a bad thing.
Second.
Any discussion? Chase.
Yes, Chase Hageman for the record. I think the reason we had 12,000 last time was just to be extra safe.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is 5,000 the extra safe number?
Yeah, okay. So a great question. So we're really fortunate. We have, I wish Shannon, every time I talk about this, Shannon is here. Shannon Reed is on the board, represents a community college system. They're providing the venue for free at NHTI, including their big auditorium, the student center lobby, multiple breakout session rooms, AV that works, actually, like really good, microphone, they took really good care of us, all for free.
IT support,
everything. They were phenomenal. So for free. So the only real cost there is the food, which talking with Stan, who runs the food service, you know, probably the costs have gone up a little bit. Of course, we all feel it, but, you know, we think confidently 5,000 should be. And if not, I could afford to skip a meal. So.
All right, thanks.
All right.
Is there a culinary program get involved in food?
They don't have, great question. They don't have a, so we kind of picked, we picked a community college without a culinary program, unfortunately. We thought about actually moving it up to Lakes Region and doing it, but they just didn't have the venue for that sort of thing. So we were trying to think of, and the food up there is really good too, yeah. Lakes Region, so. But if we get sick, they have a great medical program, or if I chip a tooth, the dental program's right there.
Thank you.
Don't chip a tooth on the food, hopefully.
Yes. All right.
Hopefully
we could talk to somebody. Any other questions? If not, there's a motion on the floor, duly seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay. And the last item we have for the board is item 3F. So we will frequent, and that's where I with spacing and put dislocated worker twice, apparently. So apologies for that. Item 3F is to move $150 in unused rapid response. $150,000, I'm sorry. What did I say?
$150.
We're gonna pass a hat around the table.
Yeah.
That
seems dramatic.
Goodness. Oh, forgive me.
No problem. I don't spell out my chair.
It's gonna be really good. Every dollar counts.
So we would like to transfer $150,000 of unused rapid response dollars. Why they're unused? So we have, well, we run an efficient program. We did have some staff transitions. So when staff are not in the position, so when Jimmy left, there was a little bit of gap. When other folks have transitioned out of service. So we find ourselves with additional funds that we have unspent that can be confidently moved. The WIOA legislation allows for money to be moved between adult and dislocated worker. We'll frequently do that. We've moved money to adult from dislocated worker and dislocated worker to adult, vice versa. You can't move it from youth. That's in the law. Don't know why. But so we would like to transfer $150,000 from the rapid response funds to the dislocated worker program. They have, despite having some of the lowest unemployment in the country, our program is exceeding enrollment goals and really firing on all cylinders. So we're really tight on funds, as Melissa mentioned, we're keeping an eye on it. But we don't want the money to cycle back to the feds, so this is a preemptive measure to help do that. Happy to answer any questions about the $150,000, not $150.
Questions?
So
moved. Okay. Moved. Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? One abstention, me.
Okay, one abstention. And then the second was Larry Major?
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, that concludes what we had. Staff, if the board had any motions or discussion.
Anything else anybody else has? If not, this concludes today's meeting of the State Workforce Innovation Board. This meeting's been recorded, was conducted in a manner compliant with RSA 91A. Please end the recording and say what time we've ended. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Move, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, everybody, for coming today.
Yeah, he's through.
2:29 p.m.
Thanks.
Good.
Yeah.